I got a bad feeling about this.
No reward is worth this.
Why, you stuck-up, half-witted, scruffy-looking nerf herder!
What a piece of junk!
Will somebody get this big walking carpet out of my way?
And we are here for another Star Wars version of Meet Me at Mutual. We appreciate, I'm your host, Daniel Shoptaw. You'll find me at C70 or on my personal Twitter at DShoptaw. I'm with Tina Bradley, Erdrick Storm, as we talked with Tina last time. Steve McNeil should be joining us soon. A couple of others that were scheduled to appear, messed up their priorities and had work and family stuff. Tina and I don't understand this, but
they have abandoned us in our hour of need.
That's right. But thankfully they were not our only hope. We've got, like I said, we've got Tina here. We hopefully will have Steven coming in.
There's always another hope.
That's right. We are going to talk about two major topics tonight, and we're going to talk a lot about the director mismatch, swap around things that seem to be going on quite frequently with Lucasfilm. The most recent, of course, being Colin Trevorrow being let go from Episode 9, and J.J. Abrams given the movie to kind of answer some of the questions he set up with Force Awakens. And then we're going to talk about the upcoming season of Rebels, and a little bit about Rebels in general. And we'll get to that in a little bit. We'll save the good stuff for the end. But Tina, like I said, we've had the most recent swap out, which, this wouldn't be a big deal if it wasn't for like the third or fourth time that
right.
Lucasfilm has changed people's that are running this. Let's look at this maybe in a broader perspective. Does it really matter to you who directs the film?
I mean, not really. I don't really pay that much attention to directors. J.J. Abrams is obviously kind of a name because he rebooted Star Trek and he did the first one of this trilogy. But beyond that, I don't care that much as long as they don't mess it up.
Yeah, it's kind of my opinion too. I mean, I know that there are a lot of people that go into movies and they see the signature style of the director or of how they're framing things or how they're going about things. I don't think of that stuff. I'm just not educated enough, whatever. I'm just going in to sit in there and watch the movie. And I want it to be a good movie, and that doesn't really matter how it's shot or who's doing the thing. You're right. You hear names. You know names like J.J. Abrams. You know names like Ron Howard, who's taking over the Han Solo movie. But I don't know that, for me personally, I know that people that do film, they're like, oh, well, if you put this person next to this person, it's going to be a totally different movie. And I'm sure it is. But all I'm worried about is the movie that I'm going to see, not
exactly
the movie that might have existed. And so we do get J.J. Abrams back in this seat. And this is a guy we saw on Force Awakens. What do you think? I mean, he's also going to be writing this story, which is, I think, the biggest, this is where directors will matter if they're also doing some of the writing.
Right.
Is this a good move for Lucasfilm to go back to this well so quickly?
I think it probably is, because it at least will give you some consistency between the first one and the third one in terms of the story and everything. The only thing that really worries me about it a little bit is I felt like the first one that he did relied really heavily on nostalgia. And when you kind of get over that, oh cool, we're back to the kind of the old style Star Wars again, I'm not sure the story was really as strong as it could have been.
Yeah, I think that's what a lot of people are going with, and I agree as well. You have this idea that Force Awakens was an updated version of A New Hope. The argument that I have seen online is that the kind of needed to do that in part to wipe the prequels away from people's minds and really get them to thinking about what Star Wars is or what it has been, and get people excited about this as well. And we kind of talked about it a little bit last time on the show, that they needed solid hits to start this thing out with. I mean, 10 years from now, they can do whatever they want to because everybody's going to be, it's kind of like Marvel. They wouldn't have started with Ant-Man, but, you know, by the time they've got that thing down, people go to Ant-Man because, hey, it's a Marvel movie.
Right.
So I do think that a lot of the idea of, you know, then people are saying he's just going to repeat Return of the Jedi, but I think the biggest difference is there's a movie in between these two, and he's going to have to figure out how to solve the problems of The Last Jedi.
I think, you know, that can be done. If you look, I don't know if you've seen the Harry Potter series, but there was 10 million of those, and they had a whole bunch of different directors, and there was some stuff that kind of didn't work from one movie to another, but they did a pretty good job of patching the story together from one directorial style to another. So I think it can work, but I definitely think he's going to have to focus more on writing a story that's going to be a satisfying conclusion rather than just, you know, here's Star Wars again. And I do agree that that was probably a good approach to the first one because it got everybody enthusiastic about it again, whereas if they'd started with something more like Rogue One that was more story-driven, people might not have been interested enough to really get back into it.
Yeah, I think that's very true. I mean, starting with Rogue One, I mean, Rogue One was a gamble to have as a first standalone, but at least it tied into that original era, but you definitely couldn't have that be your first one out of the gate. You know, and I guess the other issue with J.J. Abrams, and some of this is not necessarily fair because things like Lost, he kind of helped get started, but may not have been involved afterwards, but it feels like J.J. often likes to set up mysteries, but he's not necessarily around to, you know, satisfactorily end them. And he's going to have to do this time because not only whatever he set up in Force Awakens, but whatever Rian Johnson does with Last Jedi, he's got to kind of put a bow on it. I mean, he can leave a few things open maybe for a future movie, but he's really got to put a satisfying, you know, closure on this thing.
That is a good point. Hopefully the fact that he's just doing a movie that the whole point of the movie is to wrap things up, he won't kind of get lost along the way. Because I definitely, with some of his other projects, you feel like he had a really good idea in the beginning, and then it was just kind of like they had no idea what they were going to do from there, and then it ended really unsatisfyingly. So hopefully that won't happen in a more compact project where all he's doing is ending this story.
Yeah, because, I mean, there are people that are like, hey, what about this? Or, hey, what about this? Or, wouldn't this be cool? And, you know, it's like, okay, well, there's the ideas. Now, how do you put those into practice? How do you, you know, solve those things? And it's like, nah, y'all worry about that part.
Of course, to some extent, with all of the expanded universe stuff, we don't really know for sure if this is going to be the ending. Obviously, it's going to be, you know, the end of this part of the trilogy, but there's the possibility that we could get whatever's not answered in other movies that come after that.
Oh, yeah. Then that's what I think. I wouldn't be surprised if there's some loose ends or a few things here and there that could be picked up, but not major ones. I mean, he does have to, you know, solve a lot of the major ones. And that's an interesting question to maybe go off a little bit of a tangent, but do you see, I mean, we've only seen one. We don't know what Last Jedi is going to look like yet, but do you think that they will, you know, kind of almost immediately start in on another trilogy, or are they going to really, after 9, start expanding into these standalone stories a little bit more and maybe put another trilogy off for a few years?
I'm expecting it's most that they're going to focus more on the standalone stuff for a while, because I think it's just going to be overkill to immediately jump into another big trilogy that's supposed to be a continuation of everything that we've already had. Because, I mean, with the ones that we're getting now, these are the ones that Lucas claimed he had planned out all along, which nobody believes, but he claimed it at least. But if you immediately jump, the only way I can really see them moving into another trilogy is if they do try to set this up as kind of like a resurgence of the Jedi, and the next trilogy kind of focuses on new Jedi as opposed to continuing with the characters that we already have.
And that's very possible. And I feel like maybe someday they will do another trilogy, but, you know, there is so much stuff that they can do standalone. Start these, you know, even setting some of these characters up maybe for a trilogy down the road, kind of like they did with Avengers, and have these standalone movies with these characters we start to get to know, and then, you know, bring them together or something like that. I mean, the Star Wars universe is so different than a Marvel or a DC universe, I don't know that we even have a full grasp of how that universe looks video-wise.
There's so many characters out there, and they have a lot more room to just kind of grab characters and claim that they were there all along, but they weren't on screen, and make a story about them if they want to as well.
It worked for Rogue One, so...
exactly.
I think, honestly, for standalone movies, they've got this... They're going to have this gap of that 30 years that they can do some stuff with, and it may require recasting a Luke Skywalker, or it may require, you know, setting it... But you could put some characters in there that, you know, then, yeah, you could bring back into this era or whatever a little bit differently. I think that's a really good way of populating that 30-year gap is by, you know, new TV shows, but also with standalone movies. But so I guess the biggest thing that people are talking about then when they see all this turmoil, as they say, you know, a couple of things, I guess. One thing that they say is Lucasfilm has no clue what they're doing. And then there's another faction that says Lucasfilm just doesn't want these creative, you know, they want, you know, old reliables. They, you know, thought they wanted creative people, and then they don't. Are either one of those valid, or is there something, maybe some other way that we could look at this?
I suspect there's probably some validity to the second one in that they've kind of tried to pick these somewhat different voices than what they've used before, and then got into it and then decided, maybe we ought to just go with the old tried and true and put Bowman out there.
All right. So Kathleen Kennedy is Mike Matheny. That's
exactly.
That's not encouraging, I don't think.
It's curious to me that they went, I mean, it's like they decided they wanted to get away from George Lucas and not have him direct all of this stuff, but then they keep firing directors and going back to kind of safe choices, and it makes you kind of wonder why they just didn't let George do it.
And that's true. I mean, there's definite thing there, but, you know, I think for Disney, they want to put their stamp on this. And anytime George Lucas is around, no matter who actually owns Star Wars now, George Lucas is always going to have that final say, or at least feel like he's going to have that final
say.
That's true. And let's be honest, George Lucas is not one that's going to listen to Disney either. I mean, if they did make him do the movie a different way, he'd come out in the press and say, well, I wanted to do this, but, not the normal glad handing that we get on late night talk shows or anything like that. So George is probably a little bit of a liability in Disney's point of view.
That's probably true.
So, but yeah, I think that, you know, I listened to some other Star Wars podcasts, and it seems like there is that idea that either they didn't want these guys, or they wanted them, but then they got into that mix and it wasn't exactly what they thought.
Right.
Or it's just, you know, they've got... Go ahead.
So far, I mean, they've definitely not really done anything particularly out there with trying to reboot the franchise, and I wouldn't have really expected them to do it with Episode 7, because like we talked about, they're trying to get people back into it, and it seemed like they wanted to really strongly signal these aren't the prequels that everybody hated, this is, you know, classic Star Wars again. With Rogue One, it was a little more different, and it actually kind of a little slightly darker than what we'd seen with some of the other Star Wars stuff, but for the most part, they seem like they're really trying to play it safe, which I guess is pretty typical of Disney.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Disney is a creative place, but they didn't make billions of dollars by, you know, challenging, I don't think, you know, audience expectations too much.
Right.
I mean, they gave them what they wanted, and that's a pretty good thing for financial success. This Star Wars isn't an art film. I mean, I don't think...
That's true.
I think that there's a way we expect to see Star Wars. We don't want, you know, Quentin Tarantino getting in there and, you know, letting the Jedi just slice everybody up and, blood everywhere, all this kind of stuff. I mean, there's some rules that they go by.
I think
the only thing that's weird, I don't think we would worry about this Episode 9 switch if it wasn't, especially for the Han Solo movie. And that was the weirdest one for me. I mean, there's the idea that they brought in a guy to help Gareth Edwards, but you know, Edwards kind of accepted that, and he got to keep his name on the movie, so that seemed to work out pretty well. But, you know, to recast, you know, put Ron Howard in there when they've shot 75% of the movie,
right?
I'm not saying that's a bad thing, because obviously they weren't seeing what they wanted to see, but that probably raises more red flags than anything else that they've done.
Well, it's not something you're used to seeing with a major film franchise like this is, that's you get so far into it and they're just pitching directors and bringing in new people, and there's all this. I mean, you would think they would have a pretty good idea what they wanted from the beginning, and they wouldn't get that far into it and decide to completely change course. So I don't know if it was a matter of some kind of test screening and the audiences were really not liking it or what was going on, but it's definitely not what you expect to see from a major production.
No, and it sounds like there's at least some part of, you know, they were looking, you know, Lord and Miller being comedy writers, being guys that have come at this obviously in a different way, we're looking for more improvisational, that word, style of things, whereas, you know, while there's a couple of famous ad-libs in Star Wars, mostly it's pretty strict. I mean,
right.
this is a fandom, especially, that is so tied to continuity that, you know, if you're Han Solo ad-libs some remark that makes it into the movie that rewrites, you know, some other part.
Right.
You know, you got to know what you're talking about. You don't want people's heads to explode because they probably would.
Right. Not only that, people are so attached to these characters that anybody that messes them up is just going to get ripped shreds. So they've got to be careful.
Absolutely. I mean, you're right. It's interesting enough to see how. I mean, and we haven't seen anything yet, so we don't know how it really will be responded to, but, you know, this idea of recasting Han Solo seems to have gone over okay so far, but you're right, it's that tightrope that if he comes out and it's a very slapstick or a very, you know,
right. Weird
take on Han Solo, not only do the, you know, the writers and the producers and directors get it, then, you know, the actor does too. I mean, and that's just...
Right.
That's the problem, and if you want to use him in another, you know, again as Han Solo... you got to make sure it's right the first time out. So
exactly, and that seemed like kind of a weird direction to go with that to me. Anyway, I mean, is there really a whole lot of people out there that want to see a Han Solo comedy buddy flick? I mean, I don't. But
yeah, I mean, Solo's got a wit to him, and you know, sarcasm,
right.
Obviously. But I don't know that you would consider it a comedy. Yeah, I think. That was a little weird, but it feels like Kathleen Kennedy found some of these guys, saw their work, and thought, hey, these guys would be interesting to see. But the more that she got involved with them and saw what they were coming up with or whatever, it just didn't mesh. Now, with Colin Trevorrow, there is that idea that Episode 9 was going to be such a Carrie Fisher movie, that Princess Leia was going to play such a huge role in it. And when she passed, they had to pretty much, you know, start from scratch. And,
right.
And maybe that seems to be where some of this conflict came in, of trying to figure out how to honor her while redoing this whole script.
That would make sense, because that's definitely something that I'm sure upended what their plans were, since they apparently had planned to make her a central character in the movie, and then... I mean, they're obviously not going to recast that role, so they've got to do something completely different, and that I could see some conflict arising over how somebody wanted to handle that.
Yeah, I'm with you on the not recasting it, but I have heard others that say they'd rather the story be told how the story was supposed to be told and put another actress in that spot. But it feels to me you can recast younger, but I think to try to, at this pinnacle moment, to try to recast Leia, it's so tied to Carrie Fisher that, you know, you put that person in there, it's not going to have the same impact as that story would have had if Carrie Fisher had been there.
I mean, for me personally, I would be okay with it, but I just don't think it would go over that well, and I don't think that they're going to want to take the chance on it, because there's too much chance that people wouldn't accept the recasting, there's also people that might view it as being, you know, disrespectful to her memory with her having passed so recently or whatever, and I just don't really see it happening. I mean, it has been done in other movies, but not really with a character that people were so tied into the actor, like, you know, with the Harry Potter movies, the guy that played Dumbledore died pretty early on and they had to recast him, but I don't think people were really that attached to the actor in that movie, whereas Carrie Fisher is Princess Leia in Star Wars, so it's going to be really hard to replace her.
Yeah, because that, you're right, that's the difference in the Harry Potter movies. That character of Dumbledore was created by J.K. Rowling on the page, and
right.
Everybody already was very fond, and it really didn't matter. You could just put the guy behind the beard to some degree. but Princess Leia, you know, Carrie Fisher created Princess Leia, and like I said, if you wanted to go back and do, you know, prequel movies, or if you wanted to go back and do stuff in that 30-year time gap and you wanted to recast, I think that's one thing, but this whole arc and trying to build this way and then, you know, dropping another actress in there, for me, it would take a little bit of it. I mean, you still get the impact maybe, but not as much as you would have otherwise if Carrie Fisher had been there. But
right.
So, yeah, trying to rewrite this, especially when Episode 8 does not address that, because she was obviously still alive when they were doing Episode 8 and doing all the work on it, that has to be a very difficult needle to thread, and I could see where that could be a place where, you know, maybe, you know, Trevorrow wanted to do CGI or really was adamant
yeah.
about that, and they didn't. I don't know. He could have been anything, but it was. I think that's got to. It feels to me that that's really where the crux of this probably comes from.
Well, it's going to be kind of hard for them to address it in any way that's going to satisfy everybody, because, I mean, nobody's really going to want the dies off-screen thing, but how else do you do it if you're not going to recast it? The CGI usually looks completely terrible, and I would rather have them recast it than see that, so I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it worked for Tarkin, I thought. It did not work for Leia as much at the end of Rogue One, which is really weird.
She had this kind of weird, like a glowing thing. I mean, it looked very fake. Tarkin, I mean, I didn't really like it with Tarkin either, but I mean, it worked. He was always kind of, you know, like living skeleton looking anyway. So,
sure.
But she, and that for me, them putting that, you know, CGI young Leia in there in the Rogue One thing made it kind of cheesy way to end the movie, so I kind of wish that they hadn't done that. They should have just not shown her face or something, but
yeah,
well, they did it.
Yeah, they did. And as somebody has, like, again, I was listening to a show, a guy was talking about, he was a director, and he said if he was him, he would have had, you know, recast Leia there, and then you would have this actress, and you have the guy playing
right.
Han Solo, and then maybe you recast a long Luke, and you've at least got character people that you're familiar with when they go.
That would have made
stuff.
More sense to me. I mean, I felt like, I mean, that whole sequence was a little bit cheesy with the mm-hmm. everybody handing the thing off through the door and all that. I felt like they were trying to make it, you know, be this big reveal, this big moment, like, oh my God, it's young Carrie Fisher. And instead it was just kind of like, ugh, it's fake Carrie Fisher.
there definitely was something of that. I don't know what it was about her that it was off, a little more off-putting for
well,
me.
Well, I felt the same thing about the Tron remake when they tried to use the de-aging thing on there. It just didn't work. It didn't look right.
Although I will say, you know, Guardians of the Galaxy 2, when they used Kurt Russell, you know, younger Kurt Russell, it seemed to do okay, but that was very limited use.
Yeah, I didn't see that one. I actually didn't like the first one, so I didn't watch the second one.
Well, that's fair, because I didn't see Tron. So, you know, we're good.
Well, you didn't miss anything with Tron.
Yeah, I don't know. I maybe we'll know more after December, and we see this movie, and then we get a little bit more information about how 9's going to look. But with them, you know, redoing this director bit, they also pushed the date back of 9 to December. For me personally, I know Star Wars has this huge history of May releases. I really enjoy these December releases, and I would like them to go ahead and bump Han Solo back and just, you know, just own December from now on.
Well, to me, it really makes more sense, because you're getting in there and the holiday season, nobody's got anything else to do, you know, besides go see a movie, and they're really family movies that are targeted at kids and everything, so it kind of makes sense to have the holiday season releases rather than in the middle of the spring.
Yeah, and I feel like, if nothing else, your merchandise sales are better when you're doing it at the end of the year.
That's true.
Christmas is coming around, and you do a, you know, like we just talked last time, Force Friday here at the beginning of September. People can start, you know, the toys start coming out, and you've got stuff put away for Christmas and things of that nature. I mean, if you have a May release, what are you going to do? A February, you know, Valentine's Day, Force Friday? I don't know that that's... I mean, everybody's going to buy stuff, no matter when it comes out. But you do have that extra push of Christmas time with those movies. So, I don't know. I still have... I know they haven't done it. I know they seem to be holding to it. But I got to believe they're going to move that Han Solo movie before it's all said and done. Because otherwise, we go 6 months between 9 and Solo, and then we go a year and a half between Solo, or I mean 8 and Solo, and then a year and a half to Solo and 9, and I think they'd rather space that out a little bit better.
You would think they would, I mean, unless they're so worried that it's going to tank that they want people to forget about it and move on to the next one, but it would make more sense to space them out a little more.
Yeah, you would think, you'd think it'd be the other way around, you know, you'd make it, you know, May of next year, so that way if it does do badly, then, oh, here, we got to do it in 6 months. Don't worry about it.
You know, that's true.
Now you got a year and a half to sit around and talk about Solo and Trailhead, so they better, it better be pretty good. So, all right. Well, still no Mr. McNeil, so if he joins us, we'll bring him in. But otherwise, we're going to go ahead and switch topics a little bit here, and we'll talk a little bit about Star Wars Rebels, which will be making its fourth season debut on October 16th, so just about a month from now. And before we get into what we want to see or what the trailer has, I want to talk about what apparently is a very weird scheduling thing for this season. It's only, I think, excuse me, I'm clogged up now.
Okay.
I want to say it's a shorter season, so I don't know if it's 13 episodes, I don't know if it's 16, 18, something, but it's shorter than the 22 that normally is. And yet Disney is going to run off two on the first night, a Monday on the 16th, two the next week, and that's all we've seen so far. But the first six episodes of, you know, what could be close to half the season are going to be run off in 3 weeks. It's the kind of schedule that you kind of see for stuff that, you know, usually doesn't have a you know, that the company has bought or it has to burn off these episodes.
Right.
I'm a little surprised they're not trying to stretch this out, especially when there's not been any notification or any indication of what's coming next for animation.
It is kind of interesting. I kind of wonder if it has anything to do with their whole efforts to get their own streaming service going, since they're pulling all their stuff off Netflix and everything, and they're trying to come up with their own thing that presumably people are going to have to pay for in order to watch stuff on.
Yeah, and when you talk about that, that's my feeling. You know, a lot of people are saying, well, I'm not going to get a Disney thing because I own the movies, or I don't need to, you know, pay for a streaming service to watch all this Disney stuff, that a lot of it, which I have. And my feeling is that that's where the new Star Wars movie, the new Star Wars, you know, animation is probably going to wind up being on that instead of Disney XD, or there's going to be some sort of correlation. And
that would be my expectation, because that would be the sort of thing that dedicated fans might be willing to grudgingly sign up to their service in order to be able to see it if they can't see it anywhere else.
Yeah, or, you know, even small live-action. I mean, it's kind of what Marvel has done with Netflix and Iron Fist, Daredevil, all that kind of stuff. They could do small things like that for Star Wars and make it dedicated to their streaming thing, and people would have to sign up, because, I mean, that just has to be done. I would have to do that, unfortunately.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with that, because it's getting to the point where there are so many streaming services now that it's going to end up being more expensive to try to sign up for every streaming service that you need than it is to have cable. So something's going to have to give there eventually.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that, you know, it was funny, as I've seen people talk about it, it's like we've complained for years that we wanted, TV a la carte. Well, we're kind of getting it now, and it's going to wind up costing us more money that way. But
let's It's ending up being almost like video game consoles, where the vast majority of everything is everywhere, but then everybody's got this one thing that you've got to get on theirs if you want to play it. It seems like it's going that way with these streaming services, where there's a lot of overlap, but then everybody's got their own exclusive stuff that if you want to see it, you've got to get on there. Like, you know, there's a couple of things on Hulu I'd kind of like to watch, and there's a couple of things on this CBS All Access, and now there's Disney, and it's like, quit taking all my money, people.
Yeah, this is true. You've got to kind of decide where you want to go with it, so and that's going to be interesting. But at least that sounds like it's still about a year or so away for them actually getting that done, and we'll see if they're able to construct this. I know that, you know, obviously other people have, but you still have to build it from scratch. So that's going to be a little bit of a challenge for them, I would think. But yeah, so I'm a little surprised that they're wanting to get through it so quickly. I mean, it would make sense if this was the year Rogue One was coming out, because it looks like there's a lot of connections to Rogue One in season 4, and so you'd say they're trying to get some of the stuff out before the movie comes out. But with Rogue One passed, and it's obviously not going to have any ties to The Last Jedi, or we say obviously it shouldn't have very many ties to The Last Jedi, it's just a very weird for them to hurry through this, because you'd think they'd want to kind of stretch this out as much as possible.
It definitely seems like a strange choice, and I've watched all of the previous seasons, not when they originally aired, so I don't even really know what sort of schedule they released them on, but it doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me to run it that way unless they just think that the interest is only among the hardcore fans and they're just going to watch it whenever it's on anyway. And I mean, most of the time, when, like you said, when somebody does that, it's because they're trying to burn off a show that's not getting any ratings, but they've already committed to it and they just want to get rid of it so they can show something else. But I don't know what else Disney's got coming up behind it that they need to clear the schedule for.
Yeah, I don't either. And it's really kind of also weird. I want to say that at least for the first week, and I think it's all three of those weeks, you know, they're airing it at like 10:30 or 12:30 in the morning, and then 5:30, and then 7. I mean, they're airing it four times during the day, which is fine, I guess. You know, I guess that nothing else that allows people to record it early and watch it in the afternoon or something. But it's just, it's not the way you do a show usually. And again, this would be something, if it was the first season or they were just trying to check the audience, but Rebels been around for 3 years. It's obviously grown in stature. I don't know what the ratings and things are like, but, you know, a lot of people that may have dismissed it early are, you know, seeing what kind of show it is. And with the ties that it has to Rogue One and the prequels, or not the prequel, the original trilogy, you know, it just feels like a fourth season. You try to, you know, showcase it some. So I don't know. I from what I can tell from the trailer, it doesn't look like there's anything to be ashamed of, though.
I mean, it looks pretty good. I mean, it looks like they're trying to wrap up some loose ends and different things. It just seems, you said there's no obvious explanation why they would kind of burn off all the episodes like that instead of just running it like a normal season. Unless they're just trying to be like the people on HBO that's like, oh, we're going to have 6 episodes this year, 9 next year, and then we're going to spin it off into something else. So I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I would never question Disney's ability to, you know what people want or how to market things to people, but that is very strange. So, again, there's been a couple of trailers out. One that came out a couple of weeks ago, 3 weeks ago maybe, for season 4. When you watch that, what makes you interested in this upcoming season?
Well, from both trailers, it kind of looked like the focus of it is going to be this battle for the planet Lothal, which is kind of where they've been centered around the whole series. So I mean, the trailers kind of make it just look like one huge battle, so I'm not really sure what... Maybe that's why they're grouping the episodes together like this, because it doesn't seem like there is going to be as many little mini-missions and filler episodes as there have been in past seasons. It seems like kind of one big action-focused. And, I mean, to me, what I really was kind of hoping to see this season is some sort of explanation of what happened to all these people before A New Hope happened, because something has to happen, otherwise it doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I mean, we saw the ghost in Rogue One, and we saw Chopper, we heard Hera's name, so there are right. obviously some people that are still part of this rebellion, and again, with a rebellion, especially a loose-knit rebellion like this, it could have easily been that they were having battles at different, you know, a cell right. that was someplace else. I think you have that out, but I think you're right, especially when you've got two guys wielding lightsabers, before you get to Luke being, you know, supposedly this last hope.
Right. Well, something has to happen with them, because either Yoda and Ben are just lying to Luke and he's not really the last Jedi, or something happened to him. They either died or they're not Jedi anymore. Something has to happen.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, of course it's not unheard of for Ben and Yoda to at
this
least
is true.
Stretch the truth when it comes to Luke.
From their own point of view.
Yeah. And I mean, I think there's some idea that Vader wasn't going to be taken down by anybody besides his family, so if you're talking about the last hope to defeat Vader and the Emperor, it had to be somebody that was a Skywalker. I mean, we've seen Ezra and Kanan try to go up against Vader and not have a whole lot of success.
Yeah.
So, you know, after Luke goes, it's like, well, we could send Ezra, but it ain't going to work. You know, so, you know.
No, we'll just take this person with no training whatsoever, and that'll work out great.
That'll be fine. He's got, you know, it's got a better chance. Bloodlines are big for the Jedi, so, you know, I don't know.
Ezra's just a loser. Get rid of him.
Yeah. I mean, come on. There you go. So, yeah, but I think they're right. I think they're going to see it. If you want to read into tropes, you know, there's a lot in this, especially the second trailer, about Hera and Kanan and their relationship that hasn't
right.
been explored a lot in the three seasons prior, although there's been hints here and there. But it seems like it's going to be a little bit more overt.
Well, that part of it's somewhat interesting because, you know, there's the whole thing where it's supposed to be taboo for a Jedi to have those relationships at all. That mm-hmm. was kind of central to Anakin's downfall, was that he wasn't supposed to get involved with Padme, and then he did, and then he got obsessed with her and went down the, you know, bad road because of it, or at least partially because of it. So that seems like one area that maybe could lead Kanan away from actually officially being a Jedi, because he decides, nope, I'm just going to go live with my woman for a while, and that's the end of my Jedi career.
Well, and yeah, and I mean, given, I know that the series has kind of knighted at Kanan, but, you know, when he finished his training, it was not because he finished it.
Right.
It was because, well, you know, everybody died. At Order 66, he was still a young Padawan, so
right.
you know, what he has learned, he's kind of
he's more or less kind of an honorary Jedi
right.
at this point.
Yeah, I mean, he's obviously got connections, and he obviously knows how to use the Force, and, you know, Yoda knows he's out there and things like that. You know, there's an idea, of course there's the big, you know, the nice rumor theory that Ezra is Snoke, and you know, that's kind of crazy because, you know, not enough people watch Rebels for that to mean anything when they get
yeah,
there.
Yeah, that, you know. I mean, unless it's some kind of Wizard of Oz thing, it's kind of hard to figure out how he would become
yeah.
that completely different looking person.
Yeah, I don't buy that one at all, but, you know, there is that idea that, you know, maybe you know, Ezra does fall to the dark side, maybe.
They've you know. Hinted at that throughout the series, so I'm expecting there will at least be a storyline where he's at least tempted whether he actually goes down that road or not.
Yeah, because, I mean, he's obviously dealt with Darth Maul and the Sith Holocron a number of times. It's, you know, we saw the trailer where he says, you know, maybe we're fighting this the wrong way. He
right.
pretty easily could have been, you know, swayed by Saw Gerrera, who also makes another return here in 4 about being a lot more, I don't, maybe vicious is the word with how they're, where they're fighting this war. I, you know, I don't know. And then there's the idea that, you know, the books that have been out lately are setting up this idea at this point in time that there's something in unknown space. And, you know, I think a lot of people kind of think it's, you know, the First Order or, you know, the First Order or some other things that are out there. It's kind of been building to this. You know, if that's where they want to go, I mean, there could be some way that these guys get lost
right.
in the, you know, the outer regions or something like that, and allows them to be brought back, you know, in a future project, in a future movie, whatever, without killing them off. Because, I mean, at Clone Wars, we were, you know, 99.9% sure that Ahsoka Tano was going to be, you know, dead meat by the end of the thing.
Right.
And not only she survived that, she's still floating around here, if you think she survived her battle with Darth Vader, which seems to have been the case. I think...
I'm going to go with the whole Game of Thrones thing where if you don't see the body, even sometimes when you do see the body, they're not dead.
Very true. Very true. Star Wars doesn't bring people back to the dead a lot, but it's still a possibility when you
do that. Well, they cut freaking Darth Maul in half and brought him back, so I guess they can bring anybody back. Didn't they also claim that Boba Fett climbed out of the Sarlacc pit? I mean...
Yep. Yep, that's
if they want him back bad enough, they find a way.
That is very true. So there's no telling, but and I can't remember. There's been some hints that Ahsoka will be back this season. I don't know that it's been confirmed.
If they're gonna do it, obviously they're trying to go for a surprise because she was nowhere in either one of the trailers.
Yeah. I think they're kind of just, you know, they've hinted about it a little bit, and it could be even just as, you know, much of a flashback or something like that. Who knows?
Right.
Lots of different things that they could go with. So, you know, we're kind of convinced that the Jedi guys are in trouble one way or another.
Well, I think something has to happen to them for the continuity of the story.
Yeah, I mean, you got to be able to explain it. You know, what about the rest of this crew? I mean, like we said, we know Hera survives.
Right.
We know Chopper is still Chopper. What about Zeb and Sabine, I guess? Well, I mean, where do we think we're going to see them go this year?
Well, I would be surprised if they kill them off. I mean, they could, I guess, because they're kind of, you know, they're not really the most important central characters. But it would be pretty, Sabine in particular, it would be pretty easy to explain away her not showing up in the other movies because she's a Mandalorian and she could have just gone back and done whatever it is that Mandalorians do when they're not being bounty hunters. With Zeb, we've never seen anything like him, really, in any of the other Star Wars movies, so it would be kind of hard to integrate him into existing stories unless they go into, you know, some standalone movie where it makes sense for him to be there. So he's probably the most expendable, I would think, of the group, but I don't think that they'll kill him off. I think they'll probably just have him be doing miscellaneous rebel things that didn't show up in the original trilogy. I guess the only part of it that's really... seems like it messes with the continuity for me as they made the Phoenix Squad out to be such an integral part of this early Rebel Alliance that it seems kind of weird that they just disappeared during the biggest moment of the rebellion in A New Hope.
Well, yeah, but they just may not have made it off Scarif yet.
True.
They were at the Battle of Scarif, and you know how long it took them or what they did from there to. I don't know. So,
Wedge was there, and that was the important thing, I guess.
That's right. That's right. They brought Wedge into this, and so that's the way of things. So I don't know. I think that, of course, Zeb's got his. You know, we had that episode a couple years ago where they found a couple of other Lasats and they took them off to
right.
a planet. And you know, I mean, there's the idea, I guess, that he could be.
Yeah, he could just go back to his planet.
Yeah,
his new planet.
But dude, I think you're right, though. I think that would be really weird too, because I don't. It's not like we're going to see at the end of this series, the rebellion's over and everybody's happy and they can go their separate
right.
ways. I mean, we know that this is really just beginning, and so it would be very strange for. I mean, you're right. Sabine could go back to Mandalore, and I think that's probably what happens, because I think that gives them a great
right.
option for the future. But, you know, Zeb's going to be part of this. And again, not because we haven't seen him doesn't mean anything. We don't see, you know, the entire rebellion. You know,
right.
I guess if you're ever going to say you saw the entire rebellion, it's at the end of Return of the Jedi.
Well, he's a character that, to me, would make sense to not show up in the other movies, because he's not... You know, he's not a pilot, he's not, you know, a soldier, he's mm-hmm. not really a guy that you would expect to be in the main part of the rebellion outside of this group, so, and plus, I mean, he would just be kind of hard to put on screen.
Right.
Because it would have to be all CGI and everything, but to, I can, you know, they could do a lot of things with him. He could just go go be on his planet or be off screen in the rebellion somewhere. And he's kind of a character you could see not really sticking with the overall rebellion if the, you know, the Phoenix core group itself kind of splintered off into something different, because he's really more there for them than for the rebellion for the most part.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, he had this, you know, grudge against Agent Callis, who now is a rebellion person. And that, I think that's going to be interesting, because we don't see him. We saw him in the first trailer, this, you know, less than svelte. I mean, not svelte. You know, he's let his hair grow. He's, you know, he's no longer.
You can just say it. He's chunky now.
I ain't calling anybody chunky. I know better than that, because, you know, then they look at me. But
obviously, the Empire wasn't feeding him very well.
Yeah, the Malaroon fruit is puts on pounds just like that. But, you know, he's coming out, and he's not that, you know, officer of the Empire type look. He's a, and I think that's going to be interesting to see how that plays out this year. You know, I don't know. And I think, I really wish, you know, there was this idea at one time that Rebels would end maybe at the Battle of Scarif, that we would see the Battle of Scarif from their point of view.
Right.
That doesn't seem like it's going to be the case, but there's so many other opportunities that I'd like to see them take advantage of, especially with the fact that, you know, Cassian Andor is Fulcrum, or at least in the books, he has been a Fulcrum agent. You know, I'd like to see him, if nothing else, in an episode. There's some tie-ins that I hope they're going to get a chance to do. And, you know, we saw with Clone Wars, they came out with a 6-season long time after. You know, who knows if they might not have, you know, TV movies or something like that later on.
I mean, with the time frame and everything, this seems to be a group where they could at least take some of the characters or some of the missions and further tie it into whatever Obi-Wan's been doing in his time in between the different trilogies. That would be one way to try to integrate them into that story. It would be hard to do it with the Jedi characters, but I could see them doing it with some of the other characters.
It could be. I mean, obviously, they don't know. We saw at the end of last season that the crew did not know that Obi-Wan was still alive.
Right.
And Ezra, at least at the end of that episode, did not tell them that, you know, he found Obi-Wan, but maybe they kind of assumed they did and he just didn't bring him back. I don't know. I think with that Obi-Wan, standalone, you know, maybe you could see something. I don't know. I think that would be interesting.
With all the hints they've been dropping, I can't imagine at some point they don't finally discover, you know, that they've been working on the Death Star and all that, because they keep dropping hints and dropping hints about that.
Yeah.
So at some point you would think that they're going to, you know, latch those two storylines together, but there's definitely other ways that they could go, particularly since the Rogue One movie has already happened. So if they're going to try to tie this into something else, they need to get him on another storyline.
Absolutely. And then, I mean, we saw in the trailer, you know, talk about, there's mention of Krennic, there's mention of Stardust, so we'll see how they go down that route this time around. You know, it's possible, you know, I don't know if we get the
Bail, I guess, since they've got J.J. Abrams doing all the movies now, they could go the Star Trek reboot route and just have this whole alternative timeline where on the one of them, Luke is the last hope, and on the other one, it's Ezra.
I'm sure nobody
would lose their mind over that.
That'd be perfectly fine. Nobody would care at all about that. So, you know, my feeling, I think I mentioned at the last show, I'd like to see the next animated series be Luke Skywalker looking for Jedi, you know, 5 years after Return of the Jedi, you know, trying to set up his academy and stuff like that. If they did something like that, when a guy that's going to be, you know, probably a far-flung exploring the galaxy type of thing, you know, some of these people could pop up again, you know, if they keep them alive, you know, a Zeb or, you know, again, we're not really sure how it would work with Hera, I mean, with Kanan or Ezra, but you know, some of the others, or he finds a Mandalorian Jedi, has to deal with Sabine. Right. I mean, these kind of things could keep that continuity going that we saw with Clone Wars and Rebels, with some of those characters returning. So, but, you know, again, they've not announced what they're going to do.
That would be interesting. I think it was actually, kind of what a lot of people assumed was going to happen in the, you know, the official trilogy that's going on now, that it was going to be more about Luke and rebuilding the Jedi, and instead they just kind of leapfrog past that to the point where something's already gone horribly wrong with his plan to rebuild the Jedi. So there's still that gap in between to fill in the blanks.
Yeah. And I don't know. There's a lot of things that they could do, and I think that should be fun to see. But season 4 of Rebels should be a lot of a good fun time as well. And like I said, the first two episodes on October 16th are The Heroes of Mandalore, Parts 1 and 2. The next week is In the Name of the Rebellion, Parts 1 and 2. And then the week after that, it's The Occupation and Flight of the Defender. So it looks like we're going to start out on, you know, start out and see what Sabine's doing pretty early on, which is probably what you have to do.
Yeah.
If Sabine's going to be a part of this episode,
well,
this season.
Yeah, it sounds like they're going to start out with the whole deal on Mandalore so they can free her up to rejoin the rest of them for the big battle that's going on in the rest of the series. And then you have whatever this whole weirdness is with Ezra and his wolves and cats and everything.
Yeah. Yeah, that part's a little weird. I will also.
They seem to be hinting at discovering some sort of secret, so I guess that's going to be the big reveal at the end of the season.
Could be, and I think that, like I said, with Rogue One, only makes this time period so much richer, and this idea that those connections that they can make to that movie, you know, you do dance a little bit on, you know, how do you stay with canon, or how do you make it where, you know, people aren't just a whole bunch of idiots because you keep telling them, you know, hey, all this stuff, and they can't put it all together.
Right.
But to be able to start piecing things together, or at least finding these connections that at least we're aware of, makes it for interesting stuff. So hopefully, you know, again, just a little bit over a month, I guess it's really 4 weeks from tonight, we'll get this started on that. And then, you know, hopefully, I have heard them say that they're not going to talk about what comes next for a while, so that Rebels can have its moment in the sun here for this last season. But it'd be nice to have some rumors start trickling out about what the next show is, because I, at least for me, I have gotten really adjusted over, what is it, 10 years now, I guess, for the most part, to having Star Wars on TV every
right.
week. You know, I still, my son and I, he was, you know, like 3 when Clone Wars started, and we'd sit down every week and watch that, and we still get a chance to do that now with Rebels. And I don't want that to be a big gap. I mean, I know there's going to be some time, but, you know, it'd be nice next fall to be talking about a new show.
Right. Well, I mean, there's a lot of material for them to draw on, so they don't even really have to come up with something original if they don't want to, because there's all of the graphic novels and mm-hmm. comics and the parts of the expanded universe that they didn't just say that's not canon, and we're going to ignore that now, that they could pull into it. So there's a lot of, I would imagine that they probably already got something in the works, and it won't be a real long time before.
Yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me at all if they don't have something ready to go to try to launch their streaming service once they get that together.
Yeah, that depending on how long the streaming service has been in the works, that may be where they have kind of, you know, timed this all together to work. So I don't know. I think that's going to be something to watch. But until then, we'll watch Rebels and hopefully enjoy the last season, and hopefully not cry too much when people die. So, you know,
I don't think there's going to be a whole lot of death and destruction. I could be completely wrong. They could be like, this is Disney Game of Thrones edition, and everyone dies, especially your favorite.
Yeah.
I don't think it's going to go that route, though, because it is Disney, and it is still technically for kids, so...
Yeah.
Probably there will be a minimum of death and destruction, and they'll find some other way to explain the whole, Luke, you're the last of the Jedi, but not really.
Yeah, I gotta say, if I'm putting odds on it, I don't think Kanan makes it. Ezra will figure out
that.
Something else, but I think Kanan dies one way or another, if it's you know, if it's a thing that pushes Ezra one way or the other, or if it's, you know, protecting him, or if it's saving Hera.
Well,
I don't know.
That would be pretty par for the course, because, I mean, how many times have the mentors gotten killed off over the course of Star Wars? It happens a lot.
Yep, just following in that great tradition, you know, so we gotta do it. So, well, Tina, I'm glad you have joined me tonight, especially since everybody else
The only reliable member of your crew.
That's right.
The only person who doesn't have anything better to do.
I am glad of it then, because I've enjoyed talking to you for this hour. And again, we will mention that if you will let us know what you think of the show, tweet at us. Tina, where are they finding you?
I am still at Erdrick Storm. I'm not writing anything. I'm not plugging anything, you know, other than that fan fiction that I'm still working on. So if they want to see me complain about the Cardinals, that's where I'm at.
That's right. And then Tina will throw in, she'll make it sci-fi complaints too, if necessary at times. I know.
So, I can do that.
That's right. Let Tina know. Let me know what you think of the show. Let us know if you like it. If you don't like it, because unless we hear, we'll probably do it again. I don't know that we're, you know, some people are probably wondering, why do you keep putting this on this Cardinal feed? And one is because this one's paid for. And so we don't have to shell out the money for another.
So if you would like to make donations to get us off of your Cardinals feed.
That's true. If you would like to help us to pay for another Podbean account so we could just dedicate it to Star Wars, feel free.
Otherwise, we are going to lobby for 17 Star Wars theme nights. And we're going to podcast during all of them.
That's right. We, you know, there's not much for us to do in the wintertime talking Cardinals. So there's going to be plenty of us to talk with the movie. So we'll probably do this a few more times as it goes along. And we'll see if people like it enough, maybe we'll spin it off into its own thing. But right now we'll keep it where it's at. So let us know either here or on the page, bdib.podbean.com. You can comment right there on the episode. Tweet at us, send emails to me, cardinal70@gmail.com. I can handle it, or I can dump them in my spam filter, whichever, depending on what you say, I guess. So, but let us know what you think, because really, I know we got one or two positive comments from last time and didn't hear any negative, so we're gonna say that's a net positive, obviously. But I think
we're trying to lobby for the negative comments. We don't need those.
yeah. But I think I know I have enjoyed getting a chance to do this. I hope you have too, Tina.
I have.
And I hope people have enjoyed listening to us. And there's always, and that's the great thing. You know, years ago it was a lot of rehashing Star Wars, but now there's always something new to talk about, and so we'll do it.
That's a good thing.
Until next time, that is Tina and I'm Daniel, and may the Force be with you.
I'm out of it for a little while. Everybody gets delusions of grandeur.